Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Hey, wonderful. Today we are going to take a brief look at the history of two men whose origins are in the book of Genesis. Two men who have three things in common that nobody else had in common. First, each one of them had 12 sons, and 12 is a number of beginnings. They began a nation, each of them. Secondly, each one was named by God. God named them. And thirdly, the name of God was placed in their name. Now, others were named by God too. Isaac, Yitzchak, to laugh, because Abraham and Sarah laughed at the possibility of an old couple having a son. John the Baptist was named. The angel Gabriel from God named him John. But nobody else had these characteristics. Now, we're going to be a little disjointed because the information, as it is placed in Genesis, we go forward, then we have to go back a little. So I may go from one point to another point and then back again to finish the first point, because that's how the information is presented. So if it's a little zigzaggy, I apologize in advance. I don't know how else to do it. But we know the original story. God called Abram out of the land of the Chaldees, Ur. Then they went north to Haran, and then into the land of Canaan itself. A famine was in the land, so down they go to Egypt. Of course, Sarah was very beautiful. So you know the story. Abram said, "Now, Sarai, look, they're liable to kill me, so just say you're my sister." Well, it turns out okay. It worked out all right. Because Abram was very well received, even the fact that God did plague Pharaoh. Pharaoh found out about it and made it right. And while in Egypt, Abram was well received and very respected. In fact, Josephus tells us that he taught the Egyptians astronomy, he taught them parts of physics, he taught them mathematics. It seems that Babylon was more advanced in those areas than the Egyptians were. Well, somewhere along the line, Pharaoh was so impressed that he arranged to have one of the noble women of Egypt, a woman named Hagar. Hagar was not a nobody. Hagar was a somebody. She was of royal Egyptian descent. And Pharaoh gave Hagar to Abram, actually to Sarai as a handmaid. So they leave, of course, Egypt. And we're now going to pick up the story in Genesis chapter 16. And we read in Genesis chapter 16, verse 1, "Now Sarai, Abram's wife, did not bear him any children. She had a handmaid, an Egyptian. Her name was Hagar. Since Sarah was barren, she says to Abram, 'Look, I don't have any children. Go into my maidservant. It may be that I may obtain children by her.' And Abram hearkened to the words of Sarai." So Hagar goes in and becomes pregnant in verse 4. "And when Hagar saw that she had conceived, she looked upon her mistress with contempt." Now, this has got to be a female thing. Now understand, I've never been pregnant, okay? So, and I don't think I'm going to get pregnant anytime soon. So I don't know what this is about women and getting pregnant. Remember Leah and Rachel? They were at each other's throats practically. At one point, Rachel says to Jacob, "Give me children ere I die." So once Hagar was pregnant, then all of a sudden she's uppity because she is pregnant with the child of the master, the lord of the manor, the head of the tribe. And she treats her with contempt. So in verse 5, Sarai says, "My wrong be upon you. I gave my maidservant to your bosom. I was despised in her eyes." And in verse 6, Abram is in effect saying, "I don't want any part of this. Deal with her the way you will. Please leave me out of this." You read between the lines, that's what Abram is really saying. Well, it says that Sarai dealt harshly with her. Now, this word harshly could mean affliction. She afflicted her. She oppressed her. And so Hagar, being somewhat thin-skinned, says, I can't take this. I'm leaving. So off she goes. And the angel of the Lord met her as she's going. And he asked her the famous question down through the ages that so many of us have been asked. Where are you coming from? Where are you going? Now, she can't answer where she's going because she doesn't know. She just wants to get out from under Sarai. And the angel of the Lord says to her, return to your mistress, submit yourself under her hands. Further, I will multiply your seed exceedingly. Now notice verse 11. The angel of the Lord said to her, behold, you are with child and shall bear a son, and you shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has heard your affliction. Now before we get into Ishmael, this word for affliction, the angel says the Lord heard the affliction. Very quickly, very, very quickly, in Exodus chapter 3 and verse 7, the Lord says to Moses, I have surely seen the affliction of my people. This is the same word, affliction, oppression. Here God sees it because they're enslaved. They're being beaten with whips. But back in Genesis 16, it is said, the Lord has heard. So these were simply words that Sarai was dealing with. Sarai was using some maybe unflattering language, but that's all. But now notice the rest of it. This is a play on words, and you'll never get it in the English. I read over this probably, I don't know, 50, 100 times in my lifetime, but I never bothered to read it in the Hebrew. Ishmael is Yishmael in Hebrew. The Y sound, the Y, that stands for third person, singular, masculine, future tense. So that tells you he will do something. Doesn't tell you what he'll do. Doesn't tell you who's doing it. But he will do. The rest of the word is Yishma, Shma, Shma, Shomer, Shamar, to hear. So, he will hear. Well, who will hear? Yishmael, El, the mighty El, Eloha, Elohim, El Shaddai. God will hear. The angel said, because the Lord has heard. You'll call his name, God will hear, because God has heard. You see the play on words? And you'll find this throughout the Old Testament. God did this many times. This means that Ishmael will be heard by God and doesn't have to do anything. God has promised to hear Yishmael even if Yishmael doesn't fully obey God. God didn't promise that to Yisrael, Israel. That's conditional. But God did promise Ishmael, and that's important. We'll see. Verse 12. He's going to be a wild man or a wild donkey of a man. We won't use the other word for propriety's sake. So just say he'll be a wild donkey of a man. Okay? His hand will be against every man and every man's hand will be against him. Now this is true. Look at the Arab world. They can't get together on anything really except for their hatred of Israel. But other than that, they've always been fighting each other. So that's the story in Genesis 16. Now, we're moving to Genesis 17. This is where God is telling Abram, you're going to have a son. But before we get to that, we have the covenant of circumcision. And in 23, God took his son Ishmael and all that were born in the house, and they were circumcised. But the interesting thing is, who circumcised Abraham? Who circumcised Ishmael? Now, you would think, well, Abraham probably did it to everybody. Well, maybe he did, but we're not told that. According to tradition, again, you know, tradition, there are traditions and there are traditions. Yishmael took the initiative and circumcised himself. If so, that will show you the bold determination of Yishmael and his capacity to inflict pain. You look at the history of the Arab peoples, and they have suffered a lot of pain. So now, I'm not dogmatically saying it's so, but it does fit the character of Yishmael. Now again, we're going to see a play on words here. God tells Abraham that he's going to have a son. And what does Abraham do in verse 17? Abraham fell on his face and laughed. This is Yitzchak. Tzachek. That's why Isaac was called Yitzchak. Abraham laughed. You can read in chapter 21 where Sarah laughed. God says, why did Sarah laugh? Sarah says, I didn't laugh. God says, oh, yes, you did. Oh, yes, you did. You'll call him Yitzchak. God will laugh. He will laugh. God has ways of naming people. He really does. But anyway, Abram says, oh, that Ishmael might live, because he can't figure out how as an old man he's going to have a son. And God said, Sarah, your wife, will bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac, Yitzchak, to laugh. My covenant will be with him, but as for Ishmael, I have heard you. Once again, as for God will hear, I have heard. See, again, we have the play on words. I blessed him, will make him fruitful. I will hear him. Now think, in a way, how special a man Abraham was to God. Because he's your son, and I respect you, and I love you so much, I will hear him. I didn't ask. In other words, God's not specifically saying it, but you get the implication. God is saying, look, I didn't ask you to take Hagar. I didn't say to do that. You did. But because you did, and because you are my beloved, I will hear him, and I will bless him. But I will establish my covenant with Isaac, whom Sarah shall bear to you. Okay, we leave off that one. So, at this particular point, we're going to go forward. We had the circumcision. In chapter 21, we come up with a story. The Lord visited Sarah. Sarah conceived. And Abraham called the name of his son Isaac in verse 3. Isaac circumcised the son. And God will make me laugh. Who would have believed that this would happen? Now notice verse 8. The child grew and was weaned. Now that Hebrew word weaned is gamal, which means what? Camel. You know, a camel like you ride in the desert. Isaac was cameled. What does that mean? Isaac was cameled. Well, the Hebrew word camel gives a sense of movement, of direction, separation. What this is saying, it's not telling us how old Isaac was, but it's telling us the condition that Isaac was in. In other words, he was old enough, whether year, 2 years, 3 years, 3.5 years, he was old enough that he was no longer fully dependent on his mother. He could walk on his own, he could run around, he could laugh. It's not telling us exactly when. So Isaac was cameled, and Sarah saw the son of Hagar mocking. Now, what does this mean, mocking? We're not told exactly when she saw him mocking. But now we're going to look at a few verses. First of all, we're going to look at Genesis 21, verse 6. God has made me to laugh. Tzachek. This word, mocking, is mitzachek, the same root word. That's in Genesis 21:9. Now turn over to Genesis 26, verse 8. This is where Isaac and Rebekah are now with Abimelech. We come there, and we come to 26, and I believe it is, yeah, let's go to verse 8 there. Yes. And when he had been there a long time, it came to pass that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, was looking out a window and saw Isaac caressing Rebekah. The word caressing, mitzachek. What was Ishmael doing? What do you mean he was mitzachekking? Look at Exodus chapter 32. We're spending a little bit of time on this word because it'll give you an idea of the type of character Ishmael really was. So we have chapter 32 and verse 6. This is where Moses had been on Mount Sinai up there 40 days. And the people down there, we don't know what's become of him. Aaron the golden calf. And what do we find in verse 6? They rose up early on the next morning, offered burnt offerings, brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and to drink and to rose up to Mitzahek. What are they doing? Dirty dancing? There's a sexual connotation with this. One final verse. This is going back to Lot, Genesis chapter 19 and verse 14. You remember the story. Abram talks God into saying, if you can find 10 people, I won't destroy it. The angels go to Gomorrah, or Sodom, and all they can find is Lot. And Lot tries to get his sons-in-law out. But look at the last sentence at verse 14. But to his sons-in-law, he seemed to be jesting, joking, mitzachek. So what does mitzachek mean? It means to make light of things, put sexual connotation on things, to be so secular, so profane, vulgar. It's like rapster language. If you've heard them, think of Eminem, okay? Think of some of these rapsters and the language that they use. Nothing is sacred, nothing is honorable, nothing is decent. Foul mouth. And Sarai heard that and said, that's it. I've had it. So back we go to chapter 21 of Genesis. She said to Abram, in verse 10, cast out this maidservant and her son, for the son of maidservant shall not be heir with my son Isaac. The thing was grievous in Abraham's sight. God said to Abraham, let not it be grievous in your sight because of the boy, because of your maidservant. In all that Sarah has said to you, hearken to her words. Or in other translations, and I know wives love this verse. Hearken to the voice of your wife. So, hearken to the voice of Sarah. Also, I will make a nation of the son. So Abraham rose up, gave the water, and they departed. The water was gone. They're thirsty. In verse 16, she went, sat down across from him a good way off about a bow shot. Now, right off, let's discuss this thing about a bow shot in 16. And down in verse 20, God was with the boy, and he became an archer. How do you describe people? Even Nimrod was not called an archer. Nimrod was called a hunter, a mighty hunter with a bow and arrow. But Ishmael is called an archer. Bow shot. Why don't you say, he was 100 yards off. He was a little ways off. What's this bow shot? Violence. Militarism. Does anybody remember the movie Lawrence of Arabia? Did you ever see it? Fascinating movie. Well, if you will remember in Lawrence of Arabia, when all the Arab chieftains gathered together in their long flowing robes, what decorated those robes? Daggers. Who does this? Now, granted, military people down through the ages have a ceremonial sword, but that was for a sense of authority, not for actually using it, although in battle they could. Remember Yasser Arafat back in 1974 comes to the United Nations with a gun. Who does this? You know, Ishmael does. How about an Arab wedding? Shoot off the AK-47s? Now, you know, Greek weddings are magnificent weddings, but they don't shoot off guns. Jewish weddings are great, but they don't shoot off guns. Who does this? Ishmael does this. It's just militarism. And that's Ishmael. You can't get away from it. God said that's the way it was going to be. This isn't a condemnation. I'm just saying, yes, God is right. So anyway, but in verse 16, she went, sat down across him a good way off, about a bow shot, and said, let me not see the death of the boy. She sat across from him, lifted up her voice, and wept. But what's the next verse? God heard the voice of the boy. Doesn't say he heard Hagar. Doesn't say that. It says he heard the voice of the boy, the lad. And then he says, Hagar, what ails you? Do not fear. God has heard the voice. Why did God hear the voice of Ishmael? God promised Abraham he would. How could God be a righteous God, a true God, a faithful God, if he didn't hear the voice of Yishmael? And that's the point I'm getting across. Even though Yishmael was kind of crass, didn't matter. He was Abraham's son. God loved Abraham, and he was going to be true to his word. And hear, God will hear. So God was with the boy. He became an archer, and he lived in the wilderness. And so now we have the story of Yishmael up to this particular point. Now I want to give you three scriptures that you write down. You don't need to turn to them, but I want to give them to you. Deuteronomy 17:12, Deuteronomy 18:19, and Deuteronomy 21:18. Now yesterday Fred pointed out about God hiding things and kings trying to find them out. In Hebrew, if you've ever seen the Hebrew Bible, it's just one mass of letters. There are no periods, no commas, no spaces. How would you ever know where to begin and where to end? Well, you just have to know. Now, if you were to look in those three verses, you'll find the words, does not listen, will not listen, does not hearken. And if you put a space between the beginning of will not listen or will not hearken and the end of it, what name is there? Yishmael. Hidden in those verses. In essence, God is saying, Yishmael, he's not going to listen to anybody. And he doesn't listen to anyone. And I would love to have Fred sometime give us the sermon of coming world government, how this world government is ever going to bring Yishmael to heel. Because they don't listen to anybody. They will do what they will do. But I'm sure there's going to be some way in which this world government is going to do it. But I'm not sure how. Maybe Fred can give us. Yeah, who knows exactly how. But I'm sure he could explain some of that to us. But this is Yishmael. And look at the Muslims today. Now, the next part of it we want to turn is Yishmael and sons. I talked about giving to violence. I talked about God hearing. Now let's take a look at Israel for a minute. We're spending more of our time on Yishmael. What is Yisrael? Once again, the Yod, the Yud sound. He will do something. Well, what will he do? And who's going to do it? The Yis, the S and the R. Now, there are no vowels in Hebrew, just consonants. So you could put an A, an E, an I, sir, sire, Caesar, czar, rulership. This is, he will rule. Who will rule? Yisrael. God will rule. So God is going to rule over Israel, and he's going to rule the world through Israel. And all that is wrapped up in the name Yisrael. But God does not promise to hear Yisrael automatically. He did promise to hear Yishmael, but not Yisrael. And there's a reason for that. Because Yishmael, remember, God said, I'll make him a great nation, but my covenant is with Isaac, Yisrael. And there is a responsibility that Israel has to be heard by God. Yishmael, who prays to God, when Yisrael doesn't, then God will hear Yishmael, and the prayers of Yishmael will trump Israel. But remember Solomon in 2 Chronicles and 1 Kings, his great prayer at the dedication of the temple, which we heard about? What did Solomon say? When your people call upon your name, hear them. Read those sections. 2 Chronicles chapter 6, 17 through 42, 1 Kings 8, 28 to 52. Don't worry about it now, but read them over and again. When your people call upon you, hear them. God will. God will hear his people when they call upon him. So it is conditional. And when Israel calls upon God, then the prayer of Israel will trump and triumph over the prayers of Yishmael. Now, Yishmael believes in prayer. why do you suppose in Islam they pray five times a day? And did you know, that's fascinating, on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, it's within Israel, but yet the authority of that Temple Mount is in the hands of the Islamics. They control that Temple Mount. And nobody, except no Jew, no Christian, can bring a Bible, a cross, no crucifix, Star of David, whatever. You cannot do it. And they have certain individuals who walk around, and if they see you moving your lips as though in silent prayer, they will interrupt you. They will not allow you to pray on the Temple Mount because they so much believe in prayer that they fear that God is just liable to do something to overthrow them. That is how strong they believe in prayer. One of the claims of Islam is that God has given the world to Islam, to the Muslims, so they can pray anywhere they choose. Now, does the phrase mosque at ground zero ring a bell with anybody? Why do you suppose they want it? To pray, to glorify Allah for giving them the victory at the Trade Center. There's no question about it. This is the history. This is the thought pattern of Yishmael. Now, we're going to take a look at a union, an unholy union between Esau and in particular Amalek and Ishmael. And that spells trouble for Israel. So we're going to take a look at that. In first, we're going to go to Genesis. Again, we're back in Genesis again. Genesis 27. Let's take a look. Genesis 27. And we have the story of Isaac and blessing. And then Esau, turns out he blessed Jacob instead of Esau. And Esau's furious. And Esau hated his brother. And in verse 41, the days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then I will kill my brother Jacob. Now that is still there. Even though Esau made up with Jacob, the descendants have not. They simply have not done it. And look at Genesis 28, chapter 9. As you see, we're kind of disjointed, going back and forth, but we have to get the thread, to pick up the information. 28 and verse 9. Actually, verse 8, starting with, now when Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan did not please Isaac his father, and they did not, Esau went to Ishmael and took a wife. So here you have the union of Yishmael and Esau. And that is going to wreak havoc on Israel, an unholy alliance. And it's a marriage alliance here. When you link Ishmael and Amalek, what is the result? Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Fatah, Hezbollah. They hate Israel. Now, we're going to take a look at Amalek. Amalek, I believe, is in Genesis 36 and verse 12. See if I've got the right one. I believe I had it. 12. Yes, here we are. 36 are the generations of Esau. And in verse 12, and Timnah was concubine to Eliphaz, Esau's son, and she bore to him Amalek. And God says he will have war with Amalek. You know, in Exodus 17, I don't want to waste too much time, Amalek struck Israel from the rear. We know that. But notice what God said to Israel in Deuteronomy 25, chapter 17, about Amalek. If I can quickly maneuver my fingers. 25, here we have it. Deuteronomy 25, verse 17. Remember what Amalek did to you, by the way, when you came forth out of Egypt. How he met you, by the way, and struck those of you who lagged behind, and all the feeble. Verse 19. And it shall be, when the Lord your God has given you rest from all your enemies, you will blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. Now, where did Amalek live, and where did Yishmael live? And this is a fascinating part. We're now going to take a look at Genesis 25, verse 18. I find it there? If that's where it is here, excuse me. No, I was in Deuteronomy. It's Genesis 25, 18. Thank you. In verse 17, we have the years of the life of Ishmael. And 18, and they lived from Havilah to Shur, which is before Egypt, as you go toward Assyria. And he died in the presence of his brethren. Now, I've got to take a minute or two to partially correct what we have here. He died in the presence of his brethren. This is an okay translation. It's a valid one. But it doesn't give the full import. That word died means nafal. He fell. He fell in the presence. He fell upon. You'll notice it's plural and it's singular. They lived, the descendants of Ishmael. And then it says he. He dwelt, he died, meaning he dwelt, he lived in hostility of his brothers. He fell upon them. This is the violence of Ishmael one toward another. The sons are always fighting. But they lived from Havilah to Shur. Now look what happened when God told Saul through Samuel to wipe out Amalek. Where did Amalek live? 1 Samuel 15. And you will see the connection between Amalek and Ishmael. So the first part, we find Samuel said to Saul, "The Lord sent me to anoint you. Now go and fight against Amalek because I know what they've done." Verse 5, Saul came to a city of Amalek and lay in wait. Saul struck the Amalekites. 7. Where? He struck the Amalekites from Havilah as you come to Shur. Well, that's where Ishmael was. They were together. There was a union. There was a blood union, and they were commingling. So there you see the link. And now here's a little tidbit for you in a way. Come down to the 1930s and 1940s, the spiritual descendants of Amalek. At Nuremberg, the interesting thing is, the beginning of the Nazi regime, among other things, Adolf Eichmann, the head of the Gestapo, not the Gestapo, but the head of the SS, when they're going through and they're going to wipe out all Jews, said in 1942, "There will be no Purim this year." What did he know about Purim? This was a Nazi. This was a German. Well, I'm not trying to say he's a physical Amalekite, but he understood the Bible. He understood the people of Israel. And in 1946, at Nuremberg, Julius Streicher, one of the most vicious anti-Semites, as he was going to his death, he's on the gallows, about to be dropped. And his last words, Purim Fest, 1946, acknowledging that Purim was being replayed. So Amalek is being defeated. Now, you know, I don't want to draw too much into that, but it's interesting. But I want you to come to Esther, the book of Esther, chapter 3, 8, in this case, 844. Page 844. You're right, Fred. It is, page 844 and verse 3. And it says, "After these things, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, the son of Hammedatah, the Agagite." Where did we find that name before?
Esther.
Esther chapter 3. Esther chapter 3, verse 2, verse 1. He was the king of the Amalekites. Agag, the king of the Amalekites that Samuel hacked in pieces. I thought they were all dead. No, some of them survived. And one of them was Haman. Now, there were 10 sons of Haman that were hanged on the gallows. There were 10 Nazis hanged on the gallows at the Nuremberg trials. There is a parallel here. But I want to conclude this whole thing with one final thought, in Genesis 27. Genesis chapter 27. And here again, we talk about God hide things and men, kings, find them out. Genesis 27 and verse 22. This is where Jacob took the stew from his mother, Rebekah, who gave it to him. He goes to Isaac because he wants the blessing. And in verse 22, Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, and he felt him and said, "The voice is Jacob's voice, or the voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau." Now, voice is spelled the same way in English. It's not spelled the same way in Hebrew. There is a difference. And I think there is a specific reason there's a difference. The word for voice is kol, or the voice, hakol. Now, you get the O sound because there's a vav. A vav is like the letter I. I mean, it looks like the letter I. You think a slender letter, slender line like this, with a dot on top of it. That gives it the O sound, kol. Take that away, and it is taken away. It's not in here. You have hakal, or hakel. Because remember, no vowels in Hebrew, just consonants. And if you look at it that way, the way it's spelled, it means weak. So what do you have? Hidden in here is, in verse 27, as I get down, he did not recognize him. In verse 22, when weak is the voice of Jacob, then the hands are the hands of Esau. Meaning, when Jacob or Yisrael is weak in prayer, weak spiritually, drives God from the public square, does not acknowledge God in schools, in government, or anywhere, then strong, because the hands symbolize the strength, the right hand, the hands, then strong will be Esau. But when Israel cries upon God, to God, then Yisrael will be stronger. And I'll conclude by saying that the last time, my understanding, that Israel ever truly cried out to God nationally in time of war was June 6th, 1944, the eve of D-Day. And being kind of a student of history, I loved it. The best war movie I ever saw, the best book I ever read, was The Longest Day by Cornelius Ryan. And the movie was so good because it was one of the only movies that really followed the script. It followed the book. You had cameo appearances by John Wayne, Robert Mitchum, Eddie Albert, Red Buttons. Remember Red Buttons on the church steeple there hanging down? The cameo appearances. But on that day, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, regardless of what you may think of his economic policies and so forth, he called on God and led the nation to call on God. And they read that prayer while he was sounding it out over the radio. And it started out with Almighty God. Talked about sending the flower of our youth to liberate Europe. And being the student of history that I am, not a master of it, you can read that book and other books and you will find out there were 5 or 6 incidents that just went against the Nazis, went against the Germans, should not have. That should have been a failure, but it wasn't, because God heard that prayer. So, but you see, Israel has to call upon God to hear the prayer. Yishmael does not. So if Israel becomes weaker and weaker in acknowledging God, then Esau, Amalek, and Yishmael becomes stronger and stronger and will cause great trouble for Israel in the future. And I'm afraid we're going to see it. But once Israel is smashed but comes to its senses and call upon God, then once again, God will hear the prayer of Yisrael and will smash Amalek and Yishmael. And that is basically the point that I wanted to get across. A fascinating story, and it's going to play out in the future. Just how long it will take, I don't know, but it is just as sure as the rising and setting of the sun.